You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back. The final hour before we head to Fayetteville, where tomorrow's show will take place. Of course, Saturday is 9-11, and we just talked a little bit earlier with Coach Lou Holt and Jackie Sherrill, who played in the first nationally televised game in the SEC in the aftermath of 9-11. But it's impossible not to look back on that time, and we're delighted to welcome back to our show Major General Vincent Bowles, retired. And General, it's so good to see you and so good to have you back on the program as we commemorate 20 years since 9-11.
Who would have thought? I mean, 20 years. You know, we have soldiers that, you know, were babies who wound up going to combat in this conflict. Like nothing we had ever seen.
And obviously, Afghanistan has been in the news for many, many weeks now. And, you know, it just comes as we reflect back. And I'm just curious, as you look back and also look ahead to that experience, what it meant and what it means as we look ahead.
Well, there's a historical context. You know, 2001 was 60 years since Pearl Harbor. And that was the last time the nation had been attacked like this. From a military perspective, an entity, not a nation, an entity with no standing army, no standing government, no standing economy, attacks the United States of America and kills 3,000 people. And the context, how we start to think about war and combat and conflict dramatically changes. What I remember is, you know, the young men and women who quickly learned that this was not going to be the Desert Shield, Desert Storm, 100-hour conflict. This is a war of ideas. This is our Cold War of the 21st century. And the first shot in it, the first real exercise into it, was the events of 9/11.
General, there was such a concern in the aftermath of 9/11, and remains a concern, but that would just be the first of many attacks on this country. We've seen terrorist attacks, but we haven't seen anything resembling that. Why not?
It has not been a coincidence that has not happened. It has not been a coincidence. For every complaint about a TSA pat-down, for every complaint about having to go through an extra level of security as you walk into the Pentagon, that all those levels and layers and interconnectedness between the intelligence agencies, not perfect, but there, that was not there before, all of that has combined to make that happen. People were committed and connected and funded to do that type of work to make sure that we did not have another attack. I remember... not that I was there, but President Bush turning to Robert Mueller, who had just taken over as the chief of, as the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I think it was the week before 9/11 he had taken over. And President Bush looked at him and said, your job just changed. Your job is to prevent attacks. Prevent attacks. So it has not been a coincidence that we have not had another massive attack like that.
And I mean, we do complain. We complain every week, whenever we fly. But I'm interested in. I know there's no easy way to explain how this works. But as someone who has been at the highest levels of American military, give us a snapshot of what goes on at all hours every day.
When 9/11 happened, for the first time in my Army career of 30 plus years, I saw the world go to threat condition Delta. the highest threat level we have. I'd seen pockets of the world. You know, we'd hear a threat over here, something over there, you know, a pocket would be a threat. But when 9/11 happened, the entire world went to threat con delta. I'd never seen that. And after we shook off the initial shock of the Pentagon getting hit and made sure folks were okay and went through that, then it's about, this is what the nation needs us to do. This is why the nation turns to us. 6 hours after the attack on 9/11, the Joint Munitions Command was shipping bombs to Whiteman Air Force Base to get ready for attacks into Afghanistan as soon as we needed them to. So this is why the nation has us, and this is what we signed up to do.
In general, because of what has happened recently in Afghanistan, you know, many feel discouraged that I know what your answer is going to be here, but many feel discouraged that that we spent unheard of amounts of money, at least over there, and the same people are essentially in command. I know that's not exactly the truth, but what is your level of concern about the way things turned out over there and how that could affect us in the future?
There was a purity to our cause. We did not go there to take over their nation. We did not go over there to rule their nation. But there was a purity to our cause. We had the right intent. We did the wrong things in executing that intent. Our biggest challenge was this. We didn't believe that they didn't believe, the Afghan people, they didn't believe that their freedom as we saw it, as we understood it, was worth fighting for. We did not understand that. When we came in and ejected al-Qaeda, they all threw up their hands and said, okay, we'll surrender, we'll roll over. When the Taliban came in, they did the same thing. They threw up their hands and said, okay, we'll, you know, you want to be in charge now, fine, we'll roll over to you. So we didn't believe, the government of Afghanistan was not able to establish a connectivity to their people that our nation has been able to establish, our government has been able to establish. And that, it was the purity of our cause was unquestioned. But the execution was flawed.
Finally, you mentioned why we have not seen attacks in these 20 years. What about today moving forward? How should we feel about our safety?
I believe we should feel vigilant. We should be safe. I would remember, however, the wise old gentleman who said, America's greatest dangers are not from without, they're from within. I continue to be concerned about individuals now, regardless of where they're at on the political spectrum. All they want to do is have an argument. They want to state a case. They don't want to have a discussion. They don't want to have a debate. They don't want to work around resolving an issue. It's, I want to make sure you hear my position. That is the biggest challenge and the biggest apprehension I have about this. When Eisenhower was president, Eisenhower's philosophy was what he called the middle way. He said the middle way is where you get things done. You don't get things done in the gutter with the left or the gutter with the right. You get things done by staying in the middle where most people can collectively work together to get things done. I become concerned about internally the United States of America, but we must remain vigilant against our external threats. And we have young men and women that are heroes every day that are going doing that. I know we talk so much about the great athletes that we see on the SEC and so many other networks. If you want to see most valuable players and heroes, think about those young men and women who go for you. They think you're worth it.
What a wonderful way to leave our conversation. We look forward to talking again very soon. General, thank you for your time and most of all for your service.
Always a pleasure, Paul, and it's a great nation to serve. I got more than I gave.
Thank you so much. General Bull is joining us, and so great to see you. Thank you so much as we remember September 11th, 20 years ago. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we appreciate all the guests who helped us remember 9/11 today. Lou Holtz, Jackie Sherrill, and General Bowles. Thank you so much. Steve is up next in Alabama. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Paul. What a great interview, man. That was awesome with the general.
Thank you.
I just wanted to tell you my little story on 9/11. As you know, I worked at on the private side of the airport up in Nashville. Now, this isn't in Nashville, but if you remember, the FAA did an amazing feat. They cleared the skies all over America, shut them down, made every plane land, domestic, private, whatever. And, buddy, let me tell you, it was something else. Now, it didn't take no time for the military to get around our gates with their M16s, and we had planes just left and right landing, and it was total chaos, but everybody handled it great, and it was just amazing, you know, because we were all just kind of freaking out.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because that day, the attacks happened in the morning. When the FAA edict went out, did planes, how long did they have to land wherever they were?
I don't know the specifics of it, you know, other than what you might have seen on some of the documentaries.
Like, if you had a plane that was headed to New York and it was flying over Nashville, it had to land there, didn't it?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, they made you sit down, whether you were, you know, like I said, either a domestic flight,
right,
or if you were in private aircraft too, they shut. That's what tripped me out. What I thought was real amazing was, you might have a 737 landing and right behind it a little old Lear jet. You know, I mean, it was just,
never, was never anything quite ever. Hopefully, never again. I will tell you, I can't remember when they lifted it, but I had to fly somewhere, I think, the day after the FAA lifted the...
Oh, wow.
And I will tell you, I had a speech somewhere. It was absolutely terrifying to get on a plane, and nobody was on the plane. I mean, there were six or seven people, and you probably remember this as well. You were so suspicious. Because everyone thought it was going to happen again, and I mean, I'm watching people get on the plane like I'm a TSA agent.
Imagine us, you know, we're coming into work, you know, for several weeks on end after that, and you know, there's the military sitting at our front door with their M16s. You know, that's a very powerful sight. You know, and we're just coming into work. You know, of course, we didn't have much to do because, you know, nobody was flying. And I think that lasted for, was it 3 days, I think? I can't remember exactly how many days it was that they did shut everything down. But, oh, man, it was just, you know, and just like the general said, shout out to all our military and our ex-veterans, and I pray for all of y'all, because y'all give us what we have, so thank you, Paul.
Steve, thank you very much for sharing that story, and I wish we had the whole show to reflect back, and it's just there's just so much happening right now, but I'm glad we were able to devote some time to it. Ted is up next in Missouri. Hello, Ted. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Thank you.
I'm a second-time caller. I'm sure you don't remember my call from, I looked it up, it was about 14 months ago. I want to bring up about the pandemic again.
Sure.
We are, we're getting back to where we were before, unfortunately. We're having spikes all over the country. At the time, I told you about a niece I had who's a doctor, having to deal with it every day, and she said, 90% of the people that come in there are not wearing masks, and a lot of people still are not vaccinated, and we've found out that the mask and the vaccination do not protect you 100%, but if it protects you 90 or 95, that beats the hell out of 0%. We need the people to lighten up a little bit. Do what you have to do to try to get this thing under control. And I have a son that works at the VA over in Columbia, Oma, Mizzou. And he's right, even with the hospital. He deals with a lot of the veterans that have gone into the hospital. And he's frustrated also in that 100% of the positive cases in there right now, none of them have gotten the shot. And oddly, my daughter also works in a hospital in North Kansas City, and she's going through the same thing over there. It's frustrating for our family. We're scared to death with son, daughter, niece, everything, having to be around it every day. My son comes home from work, immediately goes to his room, takes his clothes off, hops in the shower before he can even come out and give his kids a hug. I just wish people would open up a little bit and this stuff, you're taking my rights away from me. Yeah, it's a stinking mask, for God's sake, people. And it's a shot. Just loosen up, and I just wanted to throw that out there again. And on a lighter side, I wanted to bring up to you, Paul, a money-making scheme. And before you laugh and turn it down, I want you to seriously think about it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to propose Paul Feinbaum versus Bill Goldberg inside of a steel cage. No holds barred, no rules, must be a winner. And the amount of money that we could bring in for that, Paul, is really astronomical.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, Ted. My only question is, so moneymaker for whom?
Oh, you didn't let me finish. I was going to say you would get about 40%.
Okay.
And you could do with that 40% what you want to. Give it to your favorite charity.
Yeah,
or
Ted, I know Goldberg, and you're asking me to get in a cage
with
a guy that was the world champion, who if he sneezed would probably break my ribs. And
you have to.
But I'll do it. I'll be happy, more than happy to do it, because what's more important
now? Bill would get like 40%.
Okay.
And the way I figure, since I came up with this brilliant idea,
you'll get 20. And by the way, I will be more than happy to allow you to get 20%. And one more thing, Ted, if I could, I'll even give you my 40% of my will, because there's a good chance I'll be dead when it's over.
Well, no, Bill wouldn't go that far. Yeah, and Bill be willing to do it. He might, you know, give it to the University of Georgia where he played ball or whatever. But we could fill out the
Okay, well,
I
think I'm in.
Atlanta.
Whatever it takes. Just sign me up to get in a steel cage with Bill Goldberg and let the better man win.
Okay. Sounds like a deal.
You go ahead, Ted. You have my permission to go ahead and book that, okay?
Okay, we'll do it.
Yeah, thank you. Would you get in a steel cage with Bill Goldberg?
No.
Now, Ric Flair, I feel like I've got a better shot at. Yeah, I mean, I might do it with Ric Flair. Nothing against Ric, but I think my mobility might be better than his right now. Let's take a break before I get in more trouble. 855-242-7285. We have a guest coming up, the chancellor at the University of Arkansas, and then we'll get more bids on how to end my life.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The famous Texas-Arkansas game on December 6th, 1969. They meet again Saturday in Fayetteville, and we're delighted to welcome Dr. Charles Robinson, the Chancellor of the University of Arkansas. Chancellor, I know you went to school in Texas, but I remember that game vaguely. You're probably too young, but I have a feeling we're going to see some of those. I hope we don't see quite that emotion, but we're going to see a lot of emotions Saturday night. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Paul. We're excited to play Texas, of course, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, it's really nice to talk to you. There's so many, I mean, we obsess here, this is a sports show, of course, about what happens on the football field. But I know you've been a distinguished professor, an author, and now the chancellor at the University of Arkansas. There's a lot more to a university than cheering for the Razorbacks. Sometimes it's a tough balance, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, we're really happy that the entire state is proud of the University of Arkansas and the Razorbacks, but there's a lot more to us than our athletic program. We have a wonderful academic enterprise here, a wonderful research enterprise, and we have a great campus community. So I'm really proud to be a part of this community, and we're excited about this weekend.
Let's talk a little bit about the University of Arkansas, though, because I think, you know, we know how great they are in basketball and football and cross country and track and so many other, and baseball. But what makes this university so unique, in your opinion?
To me, it's the campus. It's a large campus. You know, we have a record-breaking enrollment this year, over 29,000 students, but it still has a small town feel. I met with students yesterday who were students of our Bumpers College, and it's the approachableness of students to faculty and also to staff. I mean, the connections that can be made again, a big campus with a small town feel. Everybody matters. Everybody belongs. That's what makes the University of Arkansas a special place.
And I think, and I've spent some time there. Last time I was there, I got a tour of Springdale and Rogers and Bentonville. And I know that we think of Fayetteville, but that is such an important community for commerce in this country. When you think about the Fortune 500 businesses and corporations that are headquartered there, and I know that has to be a tremendous boon to the community and obviously the university.
Oh yes, the Northwest Arkansas community is a great community for the University of Arkansas. We have wonderful support from many of our corporate leadership, our Northwest Arkansas Council. It's a great community, great place to live. And I'm really, really happy that, you know, we represent this community to much of the country. And so we're excited to be on this platform. We want to play this game, but we know that there's a lot more to the University of Arkansas than our athletic program.
Doctor, I'm curious about your own background, because I know you're now obviously the interim chancellor, and you've been at very high levels of the university, but you've also done a lot of time in research and in teaching and in history, especially of the South. And I'm particularly interested in that, being a history buff myself. Studying especially Southern history, which is a Shakespearean drama all into itself, and too often a tragedy.
Yes, I mean, I think being a historian helps me to, be a better chancellor. I mean, I have an understanding of the culture, of the history of this place, the history of this region. And so to be able to communicate effectively, to talk about the challenges and also the opportunities. This place, I've been here 22 years, and so it's allowed me to grow and develop professionally. And so I think that it's a great fit for me. I love the university, and the university has helped me to develop as a professional. And now I look forward to every day contributing to the student and faculty and staff experiences in positive ways.
And history is so interesting, and I mean, no state, period, but certainly no Southern state can look beyond what occurred. But Arkansas, was a very troubled place, and I'm sure as you've studied that and so many other Southern states, you tell me, it just seems remarkable where we are in 2021. I'm not trying to say the journey is over, but the state of Arkansas has come a long way.
There's no question about it. We have had our challenges, much as the nation has had its challenges in dealing with issues of race and inclusion. But the truth is that we are moving in the right direction. We have to keep moving. We can't be satisfied with simply being where we are. We're making strides, but there's more that we can do and that we are doing as an institution. And I believe that's true as a state and a nation, and that we have, the wherewithal and the inclination to live, better and closer to the creed of holding these truths to be self-evident, that all men, and I believe that's mankind, are created equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so hopefully we will continue to live and strive towards that greater good.
Well, that is certainly a remarkable thought. I'm curious, one more thing before you go. You mentioned talking to students, and I know as a provost and as a chancellor, and obviously as a professor, you interact. But I think we're all curious about what's on the minds of young people right now. What are they thinking about other than a football game Saturday night?
Well, I mean, one thing I've noticed here, particularly in this semester, is the excitement that students have with being back together. I think that year that we were forced to, you know, really live in greater degrees of isolation was a challenge to everyone operationally, psychologically, and being able to come back together. I think there's a rediscovered appreciation for this opportunity. And I walk the campus every day, and I feel this energy, this excitement. And so I hope we can keep this momentum and keep our COVID numbers, reasonable, modest, low, and continue to have the face-to-face engagements that I think are so meaningful and so important to our student body.
Dr. Charles Robinson, the chancellor at the University of Arkansas. I can't wait to get there tomorrow, Chancellor. Thanks so much for making time, and we hope it's a great weekend in Fayetteville.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great rest of this show.
Thank you so much. A great pleasure to have you. We are going to take a break. We still have some time left to hear from you, and we will do that right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.